For those of you who have been keeping score, 6 weeks of Bread of Life. 6 weeks. I was so looking forward to the seventh week today. And what do we get?
A long list.
Well, there's that too. Jesus talking about food again. All right. This is, we're back in Mark's Gospel, so we got to keep track of where we are. And here, where we are in terms of the storyline, is that Jesus is in Galilee, where he started out and where he gathered his disciples. And the Pharisees are from Jerusalem. So it's, in some ways, it's like urban and rural people gathering together. In other ways, it's like the Pharisees being that where the temple is the center of everything. And the goings on of the temple are the main thing. I mean, out in Galilee, well, there's a little bit of a different piety, and Jesus is out in Galilee, and the people from Jerusalem are there to check him out, and they see that his disciples are not washing their hands. This is not like a sanitation thing. This is actually it's a ritual purity thing, so that. You wash your hands before you eat. You sprinkle your hands. You sprinkle your food so that just in case there was any kind of impropriety in the preparation of the food to make it not kosher, that would cover it. So it's a simple thing. It happened in the temple. It's of huge importance in the temple when the priests have to do all that, and that's where the pots and all the other kettles and stuff comes in. You got to wash all that stuff so that the sacrifice is proper, right? So that's where the mentality is. And then Jesus is here, and his disciples aren't washing their hands. And it's a really important thing. And the reason that it's really important, at least it had been important, because this kind of way of keeping track of the food that you eat and how we eat it was incredibly important for the survival of Israel when they were captive in Babylon. In Babylon, they were slaves, but they figured it out. There's some things they just can't control, like what we eat and how we eat it. So we are going to keep our identity that way. And they did. And it was important. And it helped them survive. And when, in fact, God delivered them out of Babylon, when Cyrus of Persia came, defeated the Babylonians, and sent Israel back, the Israelites back to Israel, they remembered this. And they said, okay, so we maintained our purity that way. We got to continue to do that. The problem with our having gone to Babylon in the first place was we weren't pure enough. But now we've been to Babylon, we've been through the fire, now we can be pure. And so the ideas such as kosher and all of that stuff. And over the centuries, though, what happens is this thing that kept us alive, that kept our identity, now is starting to do this. It's starting to make a wall. Instead of a boundary of who we are as a people, it has become to be a wall. So we're here, and we are righteous, and those outside, the Gentiles, of which we are all members, card-carrying members, I think, most of us, are outside of the righteousness that we are practicing. Okay? And this is a problem when they see Jesus not practicing in the way that it should be done. And I mean, there's biblical warrant for this. So there they are. And Jesus has some things to say about that. But it's really interesting that boundary, St. Paul talks about it in Ephesians, is as the dividing wall of hostility. And that Jesus is our peace. Because he has taken the two people, Jew and Gentile, and made them one. He has broken down the dividing wall that is the hostility between us. Right? So, and one of the ways he does that is in the story about food. And it's so interesting that food is so important to the boundaries. Because the same thing happens in the book of Acts, when Peter gets this visitors from Cornelius. Remember, Cornelius and his family are the first Gentiles to be baptized, right? And it's crazy. I don't even think we can imagine how outlandish that was. Okay, It's radical. It is the radical change that I think the New Testament bears witness to. That God of Israel is not just for the God of Israel, but Gentiles are included in the covenant. That is outlandish and wonderful and good. But it starts with Peter having this vision. And you all know the vision. All these animals come down in a sheet while Peter's hungry and falls into a trance. The sheet comes down and God says, "Peter, get up, kill and eat." And Peter says, "By no means. Nothing unclean has ever passed my mouth." Here's a little parenthetical remark. The reason I told the story this morning about Peter's denial is how interesting it is that Jesus is talking about it's not what comes into the mouth, but what comes out of the mouth that really defiles a person, what comes out of the heart. And what came out of Peter's heart was, "I do not know the man." Right? So even though he had never taken in anything unclean, certainly out of his heart had come out this horrible, tragic, and yet redeeming words, or redeemed words. "I do not know the man." Anyway, okay, so, but God's response at the moment is, in fact, he doesn't say, "I think I know better about your mouth than you do." He says, instead, God says, "You must not call unclean what I have called clean." You must not call unclean what I have called clean. And then Cornelius' people arrive. They take Cornelius, they take Peter to Cornelius, and on the trip, the Spirit is working on Peter to interpret the vision. So that when he gets to Cornelius, he doesn't say, "I have been shown that all animals, that I must not call any animal unclean." He says, "God has shown me that I must not call anyone unclean." The transition from the animals to human beings on that walk. That must have been an incredible walk that he did. Like, wow. What insight into that image, into that vision. And so there it is. Again, it starts with food, but it's really about people. And I think that's exactly what's going on with Jesus too. You know, this is not just about the food we consume. It's also about what God is up to. So the dividing wall, the boundary that kept us in place with an identity has become the wall. So that Israel had become isolated from the Gentiles, who God was busy pouring mercy upon, just as God was pouring mercy on Israel. Right? So just, and God is saying in Christ, this isn't going to last. The wall is coming down. The wall is coming down. So, what's really interesting about all of this, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things in it, but when Jesus is, there is, I said this before, but there is biblical warrant. The Pharisees can point to, you know, chapter and verse where they say, "You should wash your hands," right? And so in some ways, this is an example of, and this is why Lutherans are not biblical literalist, and it's also why we don't talk about we preach the Bible. You hear people say that, right? We preach the Bible. But this is an example of the Word, Jesus, capital W, actually preaching against the small case W, Word of God. And this happens. The prophets do it. Jesus does it. Even some of the stories in the Old Testament are actually like their Minority Report stories. The book of Ruth is beautiful for that. When the Israelites come back from Babylon, they set up this system where you have to be pure Jew, you have to be 100% Jewish, or you cannot work on the temple. the reconstruction of the temple. Right? And if you were married to a Moabite person, male or female, if you were married to them and you wanted to join us, you had to renounce that family and come back to purity of Israel. The book of Ruth says, I have an objection here. In fact, I have a story. It's the story of a woman who is a Moabite, of all things Moabite. Blah. And she, throughout the story, we learn about her, we learn about her fidelity to her Jewish mother-in-law. They both go back to Israel. Ruth finds, it's a great story, I don't have time to go through it all. Anyway, she gets married to a Jewish man, and they have a child who has a child who has a child who is King David himself. She's the great-grandmother of King David. Under the purity law of the post-exile time, David himself would not be considered a pure Jew. So even in the scriptures, there's this like, wait a minute about that. Ezra and Nehemiah, you guys have all this purity stuff going on. Let's talk about this. So we have the word speaking a corrective of the words of the Bible. Thanks. Now, and I think that works in us too. As James talks about it, right? It's like you've got to let in the word. What is it he says? Let me see exactly what he says. He says, therefore, rid yourselves of all the sordidness and rank growth of wickedness, and welcome with meekness the implanted word that has the power to save your souls. Okay, so the implanted word. Keep that in mind as I tell the story. Just the other day, this is a story of. I've got to back up just a second because I got to tell you, because it is when Jesus says that it is out of the heart. He's talking about two different systems. Like, he says, what comes into your body isn't going to make you defiled because it's in the digestive tract. It goes in and out. He's pretty explicit about it. It goes in and it goes out into the sewer. All right? Doesn't have anything to do with you. But because it doesn't go through the heart. Now, I know some of you medical people are going to go, yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. Cholesterol and all those things, right, from the food. Granted. But he's not talking about the muscle of the heart. He's talking about the heart as the center of our moral and spiritual life. Okay? So, not physically the heart, but that center of our being. Okay? So, he says, you Pharisees, you're talking about the wrong system. We got to talk about the center of our moral and spiritual life. Okay, and so that's why he says that. But he says, but it's from there that come evil intentions. But that's not really the word. Intentions isn't quite the word. The word is dialogues. From the heart come dialogues. And those dialogues, I think, is what James is picking up on too. You got to be able to receive the word, the implanted word, because the idea of what becomes defiling is that we hear these ideas and we give our assent to them, and out of that assent comes murder and licentiousness and avarice and pride and slander, all that other stuff, right? And so what Jesus is saying is that's how evil can come out of our hearts. He's not saying that our hearts are evil. That's St. Augustine who says that. Jesus is simply saying there's this conversation going on in you. Let's pay attention to that. So now, with all of that, the conversation I was having the other day with a guy, and he's had a rough life, and he likes to talk to me, but he also likes to just like poke at me. So first thing he says hey, I read this study. It said that states and cities with stronger gun control laws have more crime than states and cities that have no gun control or little gun control in their and he said talk to about a mayor of some city, I don't know where it was, I can't remember, who is encouraging all the citizens to buy a gun so that to get that to break down on crime and to and you know, he did say, and to take a lesson on how to use it so that you can use it effectively. And I, of course, my internal fact checker was like on speed dial. And then I know this territory, and I'm going to have this conversation with him, and I'm like, all right, I'm not going to be angry with this guy, but I'm going to be firm with him, and I'm going to tell him this and this and this, and then another conversation partner entered my heart. And that partner said, tell him what you know about what violence does to your soul. Don't argue with him about this other stuff. And so I talked to him about honorable welcome home and about the veterans, the combat veterans who have judged themselves and condemned themselves because of the violence that they had done, and there was no relenting of it, and how hard their lives were as a result, and that the human soul isn't meant to do this. And I tell him this, and he's just like, we're standing, he kind of takes a step back, and he says, ah, the combat veterans I know say that there's no getting over killing somebody. There's no getting over it. There's just no getting over it. And I said, right. Except for the mercy of God. Because I've seen people get over it by the mercy of God. And he goes, my buddies could sure use that. So, instead of me assenting to what was raising up in my heart, the idea of like correcting him, you know, there we stood, two frail human beings agreeing that we were all in need of the mercy of God. That is, I think, exactly what Jesus is talking about when he and what James is talking about when he says, "Be aware, right? Be slow to anger. Be slow to speech. Let the voice of Jesus speak within you before you speak, and that way we can avoid the adultery, the licentiousness, the murderous stuff. I mean, you know, as we are able." As God gives us opportunity, God gives us intercession for our lives. So listen to those words. It's just stunning. And homework. Think of the rules, the regulations, the things that you have held so dear. Are any of them keeping you in a position where you are with people, and you are dividing between insider and outsider, between who is right and who is wrong, who is faithful and who is unfaithful? Think on those things, and then take those and present them to Jesus and ask, are these still things that I need to hold on to? Can I let these go so that I can stand with other people, not over against, but standing with people, human beings, in the presence of God, together? The dividing wall of hostility is continuing to be broken and brought down. Thanks be to God. Yeah. Another way of putting this homework is to say, when we see the walls come down, where is it that we're trying to build them back up? And